Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine you or a loved one has a rare, really mysterious multi-system illness.
Yeah, that's a terrifying position to be in.
Right. You spend years bouncing from specialist to specialist, just searching for an answer, and finally you go through the ultimate cutting-edge genetic test, like sequencing your entire exome or genome. You wait weeks for the results, hoping for a name for the condition and a path forward, and the results come back empty. You are still completely left in the dark.
It's a scenario that plays out in clinics worldwide, unfortunately. We call it the diagnostic odyssey, and the frustration for both the patient and the clinician is just immense when the most advanced genomic tools available completely fail to provide an answer.
But what if the clues to the disease aren't hidden in our primary DNA? Like, what if they are tucked away in the tiny powerhouses of our cells? What really happens when the ultimate genetic test is simply looking in the wrong place? And how could changing our analytical lens finally solve these medical mysteries?
Well, today we celebrate the work of Thilloka Ratneke, Rita Horvath, the SolveRD Consortium, and all their colleagues, who have really advanced our understanding of mitochondrial DNA diseases. We are looking at their comprehensive study, which was published in the American Journal of Human Genetics, Volume 112, on June 5, 2025.
Yeah, and our mission for this deep dive is to figure out how computational biology can actually rescue lost data. We are looking at a massive data set of unsolved medical mysteries, a novel bioinformatic pipeline, and a secondary genome that honestly often gets completely ignored.
Yeah, it really does.
Let's start with that baseline. I mean, I think most people listening know that mitochondria produce the energy for our cells. But we need to look at the diagnostic history here to understand the current blind spot, right?
Exactly, because historically, diagnosing a defect in mitochondrial DNA, or mtDNA, was an intensely invasive process because we didn't have the sophisticated sequencing technologies we do now, so the standard of care often required an actual surgical muscle biopsy.
Oh wow, surgery just for a diagnosis.
Right. Clinicians had to physically extract tissue, slice it up, and look for specific pathological signs under a microscope. Things like ragged red fibers, which basically indicated mitochondrial failure.
Well, I mean, muscle tissue makes sense because it requires a massive amount of energy, right? Meaning it is absolutely packed with mitochondria. So if there is a systemic energy failure, the muscle is where the breakdown is going to be the most visually obvious.
Yeah, precisely. And while clinical practice has thankfully evolved rapidly away from those biopsies, the modern alternative has its own distinct flaws.
Right.
Today, we use next-generation sequencing, or NGS, straight from a simple blood draw, which is great. It's not invasive and provides a massive amount of data. The blind spot, however, it lies in the software.
The algorithms.
Exactly. The bioinformatic pipelines designed to process and interpret that sequence data are heavily optimized for the nuclear genome. They are specifically programmed to look at the 23 pairs of chromosomes in the nucleus, routinely just, well, ignoring the separate circular mitochondrial genome.
Okay, let's unpack this. Why is it so easy to miss these mutations, even when we sequence the DNA circulating in the blood? I want to move past the basic textbook definitions here and look at the mechanism of heteroplasmy. Think of it like reaching into a bag of mixed marbles.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah. So if you have a bag of marbles and only 1% of them are red while the rest are blue and you just grab a handful, you might not get a single red marble. If that mutation only exists in a small percentage of blood cells, say 1%, a standard test might completely overlook it.
Right, because a standard algorithm sees a 1% variance and just writes it off as a sequencing error or, you know, background noise.
Exactly. It completely misses the fact that in the patient's brain or skeletal muscle, that mutation might be concentrated at like 80 or 90%, causing devastating neurological or muscular disease.
And the clinical complexity just scales up rapidly from there. I mean, mitochondrial diseases are not incredibly rare anomalies. They affect at least 1 in 4,300 people.
Wait, really? That common?
Yeah, that common. And the clinical presentation is notoriously inconsistent due to this variable distribution of mutated mitochondria. Take a specific variant known as M.3243 AG.
Okay.
In one individual, a high concentration of this mutation in the brain leads to a devastating condition called MELAS, which is characterized by severe neurological strokes.
But then in another family member carrying that exact same variant, the mutated mitochondria might cluster differently during embryonic development, right? They might end up concentrated in, say, the pancreas and the inner ear.
Exactly, resulting in diabetes and deafness rather than strokes.
Man, that variable presentation has to create a major hurdle for clinicians. I mean, symptoms like diabetes and hearing loss are prevalent in the general population.
They are very common.
So it is highly unlikely a physician looking at a patient with late onset diabetes and mild deafness will immediately suspect some rare complex mitochondrial DNA defect. The immense overlap with common conditions just masks the rare genetic culprit.
Which means we have a massive pool of people with RSALF conditions who have already had their blood drawn and their exomes or genomes sequenced, but the software simply failed to flag the mitochondrial connection.
Right, and that is exactly where the researchers in this paper decided to tackle that backlog. They utilized the SolveRD cohort, which is this massive European rare disease initiative. We are talking about over 10,000 genetic data sets from individuals with completely unsolved medical mysteries.
Yeah, 10,000.
And for the vast majority of these people, mitochondrial disease wasn't even the primary clinical suspect.
The raw data was simply sitting there in a repository. So to systematically interrogate those 10,000 data sets, the research team utilized a semi-automated bioinformatic pipeline called mToolbox. The goal was to literally force the computational analysis to actively look at the mitochondrial reads that standard pipelines had just discarded.
Right.
But before unleashing it on the massive cohort, they established a rigorous baseline. They validated the mToolbox pipeline on 42 individuals who had previously confirmed mitochondrial DNA variants, just to ensure it could accurately detect known mutations, even at like really low heteroplasmy levels.
Okay, wait, with over 10,000 individuals, how do you filter that down without drowning in false positives?
Yeah.
Especially with NUMTs, those sneaky nuclear DNA segments that look like mitochondrial DNA.
Yeah, the NUMTs are a huge problem. The filtering mechanism they used is deeply technical, but crucial. The mToolbox pipeline doesn't just look at the sequence of letters, it looks at the mapping architecture.
Meaning where it actually belongs in the genome.
Exactly. It requires the sequenced genetic reads to map specifically to the revised Cambridge reference sequence, which is basically the standardized map of the circular mitochondrial genome.
Okay.
So the algorithm analyzes the flanking regions of the DNA reads. If a sequence has high homology, meaning it looks a lot like mitochondrial DNA, but the edges of the read map back to a known linear chromosome in the nucleus, the software identifies it as a NUMT and just discards it.
Ah, I see. So that handles the architectural sorting. But they still needed a way to separate harmless human variation from actual disease-causing mutations.
Right, because there's a lot of natural variation.
So they implemented a dual filtering approach. First came the strict genetic filters. They set a hard floor, only looking at variants with a heteroplasmy level of 1% or higher. Then they filtered out known haplogroup markers.
Right, the ancestral markers.
Yeah, these are the common benign genetic variations that have accumulated in different global populations over tens of thousands of years. They track human ancestry, but they don't cause disease.
Exactly. So the genetic filtering clears out all that background noise, leaving behind a pool of rare, potentially pathogenic variants. But, you know, identifying a rare variant in a database does not mean you have diagnosed a patient.
Right. You still have to connect it to the symptoms.
You have to prove that specific genetic change is actually responsible for the patient's unique physical symptoms. And this is where the researchers introduced a phenotype similarity score, utilizing a framework called MITAFIM.
I want to spend some time on how this actually works, because taking a doctor's subjective notes and turning them into a mathematical score is a massive computational challenge. Like, how do you even do that?
It is. They used human phenotype ontology terms, or HPO terms.
Okay.
Instead of a doctor writing a paragraph about a patient experiencing bad headaches and occasional muscle fatigue, they used standardized, universally coded nodes in a diagnostic tree. Terms like migraine or skeletal muscle weakness.
So the ontology tree is the secret to the math. HPO terms are arranged hierarchically, right? A broad term like seizure sits high up on the tree. A highly specific term like myoclonic seizure branches further down.
You got it. And the MITAFIM database contains the established symptom profiles of known mitochondrial diseases mapped onto this exact same tree. So the algorithm calculates the semantic similarity basically the mathematical distance on the branches of that tree between the patient's submitted clinical symptoms and the known disease profiles.
The funnel effect of combining the genetic filter with this semantic similarity scoring is just staggering. They started with 10,157 unsolved data sets. And after running both filters, they narrowed that massive ocean of data down to just 136 rare variants and 135 individuals.
Yeah, from over 10,000 candidates to 135 highly suspicious profiles. And the statistical analysis of that funnel revealed a critical threshold. The researchers determined that a phenotype similarity score greater than 0.3 was the optimal mathematical dividing line.
Just 0.3.
Yeah, and this on a 0.3 threshold demonstrated exceptional sensitivity, capturing 92% of the individuals who ultimately received a new or likely diagnosis from this reanalysis.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Even with an incredibly sophisticated algorithm measuring semantic distance on an ontology tree, the entire system is still vulnerable to a very basic human error. Garbage in, garbage out.
Oh, absolutely. The algorithm can only compute the data it is fed.
Right. The data show that a handful of individuals who genuinely possessed pathogenic mitochondrial mutations actually scored poorly on the phenotype test, falling below that 0.3 threshold. When the researchers investigated why, the issue wasn't the software, it was the clinical documentation.
Yeah, the clinicians just hadn't entered enough specific HPO terms. If a physician observes a complex multi-system illness but only inputs a single high-level term like seizures into the database, the algorithm calculates a massive distance between the patient and the true mitochondrial disease profile.
So the specificity of the human doctor's notes literally throttles the algorithm's ability to diagnose the patient. That is wild.
It really is. It highlights a critical bottleneck in the future of genomic medicine. The researchers demonstrated a direct mathematical correlation between the information content of the HPO terms and the likelihood of a successful diagnostic match. We possess the computational power to solve these mysteries, but we desperately need comprehensive, highly specific clinical descriptions to leverage that power at scale.
Yeah, definitely. But despite the variations in clinical input, the final results are a massive win for data rescue. Let's look at the actual diagnostic yield. From those 135 prioritized individuals, the manual review process confirmed 37 new or likely causative diagnoses.
Which is fantastic.
By simply reanalyzing existing data with a targeted tool, they boosted the overall diagnostic yield of the entire SolveRD cohort by 0.4%.
And while a fraction of a percent might sound statistically minor to some, in the context of rare disease research, it is highly significant. These 10,000 datasets represent patients who had already exhausted the limits of standard genomic testing.
Right, they had nowhere else to turn.
Finding 37 hidden answers in data that had already been classified as unsolved by top experts is a major breakthrough.
And for the patients, it is literally life-altering. Having a name for the condition ends the grueling diagnostic odyssey. Furthermore, some of these discoveries provide highly actionable preventative medical intelligence. I want to look closely at the MBOT15555 AG variant they uncovered.
Ah, yes. It perfectly illustrates the concept of secondary findings in genomics and the mechanism of variable penetrance we discussed earlier.
Yeah, this variant is homoplasmic, meaning it is present in virtually all of the patient's mitochondria, not just a small percentage. Yet it doesn't cause a severe systemic energy failure. Instead, it causes sensorineural hearing loss, but only under very specific environmental conditions.
Mm.
Specifically, when the patient is exposed to a class of antibiotics called aminoglycosides.
The underlying mechanism here is fascinating. The M15555AG mutation alters the physical structure of the mitochondrial ribosome, which is the cellular machinery responsible for building proteins. The mutation changes the human mitochondrial ribosome so that it structurally resembles a bacterial ribosome.
Oh, wow. So it basically looks like bacteria to the drug.
Exactly. Aminoglycoside antibiotics are designed to specifically target and bind to bacterial ribosomes to kill an infection. In a patient with this mutation, the antibiotic mistakenly binds to their mitochondrial ribosomes, particularly in the inner ear, leading to profound deafness.
That is incredible. By finding this variant during a routine data reanalysis, the clinical team isn't just solving a past mystery, they are actively preventing a future tragedy.
Absolutely.
If that patient ever develops a severe infection, their medical record will flag the danger. It is the purest form of precision medicine. We sequence the genome, find the structural vulnerability, and adjust the pharmaceutical treatment to save the patient's hearing.
The clinical impact of integrating this workflow is just, it's clear. The era of treating the mitochondrial genome as a discarded byproduct of standard sequencing needs to end. This study demonstrates that automated bioinformatics pipelines utilizing mToolbox and Mitofin can be seamlessly integrated into standard exome and genome analyses.
And crucially, it proves this can be done without flooding clinical laboratories with unmanageable noise. Because the dual filtering approach was so effective, only about 2% of the entire 10,000-person cohort required manual human review. You get the hidden diagnoses without breaking the existing laboratory infrastructure.
We must, however, acknowledge the limitations of the current data set. The researchers do highlight a significant geographic and genetic constraint in their cohort.
Right, the diversity issue.
Yeah. Nearly 96% of the analyzed data sets belong to Eurasian mitochondrial haplogroups. The architecture of the mitochondrial genome varies widely across different global populations. So before a pipeline like this can be universally deployed as a standard of care everywhere, it requires rigorous validation against much more globally diverse genomic data sets to ensure it performs equally well across all ancestries.
There was also a major technical limitation related to exome sequencing itself. Exomes are designed to capture only the protein coding regions of the nuclear DNA. Any mitochondrial DNA captured in an exome file is essentially an accident, what bioinformaticians call off-target reads.
Right, it's basically a happy accident.
Because the capture is accidental, the depth and quality of the mitochondrial data are incredibly inconsistent.
And that variability depends entirely on the specific laboratory kits used to prepare the original sample. Consequently, if this automated pipeline flags a highly suspicious mitochondrial variant based on old exome data, it cannot be treated as a definitive clinical endpoint.
So it's not a final diagnosis just yet.
Right, it requires a secondary laboratory method to physically validate the mutation in a fresh sample before a final diagnosis is actually delivered to the patient.
So what does this all mean? If you are a patient trapped in a diagnostic odyssey, or a clinician searching for a missing piece of the puzzle, this research offers a profound shift in perspective. It shows us that the answers to some of our most complex medical mysteries aren't necessarily waiting on the invention of a new sequencing machine. Often, the data has already been collected. The clues are sitting on our hard drives, buried in the off-target reads. We just needed a smarter way to ask the computer to look for them.
Yeah, synthesizing the core insight here. By deliberately integrating targeted mitochondrial DNA bioinformatic pipelines and standardized symptom scoring into our existing exome and genome workflows, we can rescue discarded data and uncover hidden diagnoses. This automated approach effectively resolves rare diseases, even in massive cohorts where mitochondrial dysfunction was never initially suspected.
What does this mean for the hundreds of thousands of unsolved medical cases sitting in genomic databases around the world right now? Could the answer to someone's lifelong medical mystery already be sequenced, just waiting for the right algorithm to bring it to light?
It's an exciting thought.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.